I'm John Strum, and this is Real Talk MS. It's November 1st, and we have a lot to talk about. This week's episode of Real Talk MS has become one of my favorite episodes, and judging by the number of downloads it receives every year, it's also one of your favorite episodes. It's the podcast that I do each year on the last day of the ECTRIMS Congress. Just as a refresher, ECTRIMS is an acronym for the European Committee for Treatment and Research in Multiple Sclerosis. It's the biggest MS research conference in the world, and after 2 years of virtual ECTRIMS meetings, this year the conference returned to an in-person format with a virtual option also available. The reason that this episode of Real Talk MS is one of my favorites is because this is the episode when I have an opportunity to sit down right outside the entrance to the convention center with Dr. Bruce Bebo, the Executive Vice President of Research at the National MS Society, and get his thoughts on the research presented at the ECTRIMS Congress that got his attention. What was newsworthy and why? But before we get to my conversation with Dr. Bebo, I'd be remiss if I didn't remind those of you in the United States that next Tuesday is Election Day. Most of you know that I believe advocacy can make a real difference. It ensures that our legislators adopt public policy that makes living with MS and other chronic illnesses easier. And the most fundamental form of advocacy is making your voice heard by casting your vote. If you're affected by MS, I hope you'll carefully consider which candidates are going to support the kinds of healthcare legislation and funding that will most benefit you and your family. I always consider voting to be the price each of us pays for living in a democracy. Our government works and is truly representative of the people when we all vote. Voting on behalf of your best interest means that you're not blindly voting for a candidate or a party, but you're voting to ensure the very best future for you and your family. So whether you're going to a polling place to vote or choosing to vote by absentee ballot, please be sure to vote. If you'd like more information on things like polling place accessibility, something that's actually guaranteed by law, or any other aspect of casting your vote in next week's election, the National MS Society has published an online guide to your right to vote and polling place accessibility, and you'll find a link to that guide in today's show notes. Now, in a moment, I'll take you back to last Friday afternoon when I took up what's become our traditional vantage point right outside the conference center in Amsterdam to discuss the MS research news announced at the 2022 ECTRIMS Congress that caught the eye and captured the attention of my guest, Dr. Bruce Bebo. ECTRIMS is an acronym for the European Committee for Treatment and Research in Multiple Sclerosis, and the ECTRIMS Congress is the largest MS research conference in the world. This year, there were about 7,000 folks who were here at the conference center in Amsterdam, and another 1,700 who were joining virtually. My favorite part of the conference occurs at the end, when I get to sit down with the National MS Society's Executive Vice President of Research, Bruce Bebo, to talk about the things that caught his eye during this 3-day event. Bruce, welcome once again.
It's great to be here, John. We're on the steps right outside the conference center like usual, and it's awesome to be in person again after such a long time.
It really is. Yeah. So let's get to it. What were some of the things that caught your eye during the conference?
Yeah, sure. So firstly, it's been really amazing to be together after, this is the first meeting in 3 years that we've been able to be in person. This meeting's occurred virtually, and that's great, and it's helpful, but there nothing takes the place of being here in person. Hallway conversations, serendipitous meetings that happen in between sessions this just reminds me how important being in person is, and having those conversations and those interactions and that result in collaborations and new ideas. That has been a really terrific thing to have back, and really happy to have that back.
So tell me, what did you find particularly interesting?
Yeah, so this is going to be a little stream of consciousness, John, because we just walked out of the last session. There's been tremendous progress despite the challenges of the pandemic that created some challenges for MS research. I'm very impressed with the progress that's been made and some really, really, really interesting studies. And I'll give you a few examples. So the first, say, large genetic study that identified a genetic contribution to the severity of MS. So we've talked before on this podcast and other places about the genetics of MS risk, and we know that there are, 200 or 300 almost genetic elements that contribute to the risk for MS, but up till now, there's been no genetic association with severity or differences, right? People have different courses of MS, and is there genetic contribution to different courses or severity of MS? So for the first time, and it took a huge effort, they looked at 12,584 cases of MS around the world, where they had captured long-term outcomes for those individuals that they had DNA samples for. And they were able to identify a genetic variant that appears to contribute to more severe disease. It's not a gene, but there are multiple genes within this genetic variant. And the interesting thing is all of the genes within this area that associates with MS risk seem to be expressed in the central nervous system. So this contrasts with the studies of risk for MS, where just about all of those genes are in the immune system. These genes that are thought to control risk for severe MS are in the central nervous system. And so what's exciting is that now we'll have a lot of new targets to pursue, potentially for more progressive forms of MS that are in the central nervous system that we can now explore as potential, maybe ultimately one day, targets for disease-modifying treatments for progressive MS.
Can these particular genetic expressions, can they be screened for?
So not yet, but that would potentially be a possibility in the future. We don't know what the genes are exactly yet. We know a fairly big region of a chromosome that confers risk, and there are multiple genes within that region. We don't know if it's a combination of them or one of or number of them, so that's work to be done. But I think the interesting thing is that this is the first time that we've discovered a genetic association with severity of MS, and interesting that genetic risk for severity seems to be genes that are expressed in the central nervous system rather than the immune system, and may have something to do with sort of the resilience of the central nervous system to damage caused by the immune system.
Well, it's always been a big question as to why does the person next to me, when I'm living right. with MS and they're living with MS, we have such completely different disease courses, and
yeah.
This can start to tell that story.
Correct.
Perhaps.
Yeah, first time we've ever been able to determine that. And it took that huge effort with, tens of thousands of DNA samples and medical history to be able to pull it off.
That's amazing.
It's another, and this just was reported right at the last session before I walked out, is a result of a trial called ARISE. And ARISE was a trial to test a disease-modifying therapy in radiologically isolated syndrome. So radiologically isolated syndrome is the first, I'd say, earliest detectable preclinical phase of MS. These are people without any symptoms of MS, but have for reasons had an MRI scan, that maybe they had a headache or had another reason to get their MRI scans, and they had lesions that look like MS, but they don't have any clinical signs of MS yet. So this is what radiologically isolated syndrome is. And so the idea is, could we treat people with radiologically isolated syndrome with a disease-modifying medication and delay or maybe even prevent the onset of any clinical signs of MS? So that's the concept. This is hard to find these patients. This is pretty rare. You're finding people more or less accidentally, and they were able to, over the last several years, assemble a cohort of 87 people with radiologically isolated syndrome and treated half of them with Tecfidera, mm-hmm. and the other half with placebo. These people don't have any clinical disease, so it's ethically appropriate to treat, have a placebo-controlled trial. And what I, this literally just reported out, you know, 15 minutes ago, that the investigators found an 80% reduction in the development of MS symptoms in the group treated with Tecfidera compared to the placebo group. So a dramatic reduction in the conversion, if you will, from a radiologically asymptomatic form of MS to the clinical symptomatic, earliest symptomatic form of MS, reduced by 80%, and all the other, say, secondary outcomes, things like MRI lesions that were monitored, were also dramatically suppressed. So really important study that contributes to this concept that I've been talking about for a while, being able to potentially prevent MS from happening in the first place. Another trial about MS prevention was called, the trial was called PREVENCE. It took place in Australia. And you may remember that there's really great evidence that low levels of vitamin D contribute to MS risk. So the idea here was, could you delay or prevent MS from occurring in people at the very earliest stages? So this is this phenomenon that's called CIS, which is clinically isolated syndrome. So that's one step forward from RIS. So these are people that have some radiological indication of MS. They've had a clinical attack of MS, but in order to be diagnosed with MS, you have to have evidence of more than one clinical attack. So they're in the very earliest stages of MS. Could you treat them with vitamin D and slow down, reduce the risk, or even potentially prevent them from developing MS in the first place? So this was a large study that took place in Australia. I guess the bad news, if you will, is that it didn't work. So vitamin D did not prevent a second attack or confirmed MS in this population of clinically isolated syndrome patients. The good news, I suppose, is that it was a well-done study. It's pretty definitive that it doesn't work. And this study is actually another vitamin D study that reported out at the meeting this week. Was performed by Ellen Mowry and her colleagues at Johns Hopkins University as a study that we helped support, looking at treating people with vitamin D that already have existing MS, so with people with confirmed MS, step beyond the CIS designation. And Ellen and her colleagues also showed, very rigorously done trial, that treating people with ongoing MS with high levels of vitamin D did not have any clinical or radiological benefit for people with MS. So I think between those two trials, that the story of vitamin D as a disease-modifying therapy is probably closed. But I would just mention that data that supports low vitamin D as a risk factor MS is still very strong. The concept that we may be able to reduce the risk, slow down the development of MS when given at much earlier stages is still a possibility and should still be explored. But I think the concept that vitamin D could have benefits for ongoing disease is pretty much disproved by these two studies.
And that's an important thing to learn, to finally be able to put that to rest and move forward. You know, I have shared with my listeners before that even when a particular study does not yield a positive result, there's always something to learn. I remind them that Thomas Edison failed 10,000 times trying to invent the electric light bulb, and a reporter asked him, you know, how could you tolerate that incredible level of failure? And he said, I never thought of it as failure. I thought that I learned 10,000 ways not to invent the light bulb.
Yeah, exactly. As long as the trials are done in a rigorous way, they're well designed, and the answers are definitive, then you have learned something and you've checked that box.
Yep.
And we can move on to the next box, and we don't have to invest any more resources in that box, and we'll move on into the next thing. Perhaps, again, in a real prevention study, but potentially there's still a possibility that vitamin D supplementation, particularly people who are deficient in vitamin D well before MS evolves, perhaps that might have some benefit, and that's something that we'd need to explore. kind of changing gears. It's still a clinical trial, but sort of changing gears to more of a restoration of function rather than preventing MS or stopping MS, is also a trial that was reported out this week from a group in Berlin, Germany, also a study that the Society helped support, which addressed the symptom of depression. Of course, depression is a huge problem in people with MS. It's a very common symptom. It's very difficult to treat. And Dr. Gold had conceived of internet-based cognitive behavioral therapy program for addressing depression in people with MS. And so he performed a clinical trial that reported out this week here in Amsterdam, comparing this internet-based cognitive behavioral therapy, CBT therapy, with a control. He had 279 participants in his study, and he showed very, very positive, significant reduction in depression in the participants in the treatment arm in this internet-based therapy compared to the control arm, which is amazing. I mean, couldn't have been better timing, right, with the pandemic and the need in some cases to deliver a treatment like that remotely, electronically. So I'm really excited that study was positive, and I look forward to working with Dr. Gold and others in making that available to the community with MS.
This was one of the announcements that really excited me too. I think about depression because, as you pointed out, so many people living with MS have it. One out of every two people with MS will be diagnosed with depression at some point. And to me, depression is the gatekeeper for all the other therapies that can make life better. Because if you're struggling with depression, you may not get to the gym, even though exercise is good for you. You may not even get to your appointment with your neurologist because, you know, you just couldn't get out of bed that day. So to me, even though it's a non-physical symptom, it, as I said, I kind of consider it the gatekeeper to everything else. And if we can get a handle on being able to deliver treatment electronically, so people don't have to go anywhere for it and it's available, I think that is, it really excited me.
I concur, and I'm real pleased with the outcome, and I look forward to figuring out how to get it out to the people that could benefit from it. I'd say, you know, those are my first impressions, John, as we, you know, sit on the stoop outside of the convention center. Just, you know, 15 minutes out of the meeting. I'd add that, like all of these meetings, there were lots of presentations and posters with more long-term safety and efficacy data of all the disease-modifying therapies, too numerous to mention. There were a lot of interest in the Epstein-Barr virus topic at this meeting, which I'm happy to talk to you more about later. There's a interest, it's a growing interest in aging in MS and how aging affects disease progression and how disease-modifying therapies work as we age. So I look forward to sharing more as I get some time to reflect on all of the things we saw at the meeting. I look forward to sharing more insights with you at a later time.
We will definitely circle back and do that for sure. I concur with you. My takeaways from the meeting, I'm happy to say, seem to align a lot with yours. Certainly it was the depression study and the CBT therapy and the fact that aging was something that was stressed. So my listeners understand something you just mentioned. Even though a specific disease-modifying therapy has already been approved by the FDA, the pharmaceutical companies continue funding research, continue following people, and learning new things about it. And those are some of the posters and presentations that you referenced a moment ago. So even though, as I said, a drug is readily available, we know it's safe, there's still work being done to learn more about it, to learn more about how it can be used in different circumstances. So lots of great information, and you make it all very simple to understand. So I appreciate that.
Well, thanks, John. It's great to be with you again, and I look forward to catching my breath, getting some perspective, and sharing more, because this is a 3 days of, you know, wall-to-wall meetings. I look forward to sharing more with you once I'm able to collect my thoughts and
we'll do that. We'll do that, and a year from now, We will be sitting on a set of steps
in
outside
Milan.
A convention center in Milan having this conversation again.
I look forward to it. Yeah, awesome.
Bruce, once again, thank you so much for talking with me today.
Thanks, John.
Part of the challenge of attending the ECTRIMS Congress is the fact that throughout the day, you have multiple presentations taking place at the same time. And since we're not yet at a point in time when we can clone ourselves, you simply can't be present for everything. So the conference organizers make every presentation available online. That way, conference attendees have an opportunity to catch up on some of the research that they may have missed out on during the conference itself. As you heard Bruce mention, he and I are going to circle back in a couple of weeks after we've had a chance to catch up on things we may have missed, and we'll be taking a deeper dive into some of the research that was presented at the 2022 ECTRIMS Congress. That's going to wrap up this episode of Real Talk MS. Real Talk MS is powered by the National MS Society. And you can share this episode of the podcast by letting your friends or family members know that all they have to do is point their web browser at realtalkms.com/270. You'll find that link in today's show notes, so you can easily copy and paste it right into an email or text. And if you have a minute, I hope you'll visit the Apple App Store or the Google Play Store and download the free Real Talk MS app for your iOS or Android smartphone or tablet. It's the best way for us to stay connected. The app will automatically download the latest episode of Real Talk MS. You'll be able to access any of our past episodes. You'll be able to save your favorite episodes. And it's a great way for me to share bonus content with you. The app is free, so I hope you'll download it today. I'm John Strum. Thanks for listening. Stay safe and make healthy choices.